Welcome to the May 12th edition of Transitions. How was that, John? Is that up to par?
Beautiful. Callie, we're here live at the Borders at 81 North Bethlehem Pike, like we are every Thursday, and we got a chock full episode.
A show.
Chock full of things. Janine will be interviewing Liam Neeson. I'm kidding. Jonathan Smith, who recently played Aslan in the a theater production of The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. What else we got, Callie?
Well, we're talking about Facebook and its effects on, you know, career, what we think about it, the recent research that was released on it. And actually, just as of today, mm-hmm. I read in the news that Facebook is actually in a little legal trouble with Google.
Yeah.
So we'll be talking about that too.
Absolutely. Later, Callie, we'll also be talking with Dan, our current events in sports correspondent, who'll be talking about the Phillies and the Flyers and the battles between the players and the coaches. He'll also be unveiling the new segment about the NBA playoffs as well.
We got some Phillies love in the house tonight, by mm-hmm. the way. Go Phils. I was actually watching the Union game last night, though. It's pretty good. Anybody watch the Union?
Who's the Union? Soccer team. No.
Oh, they're great, and the games are awesome.
It's soccer in America. No one listens to it.
Oh, they're awesome. Okay, they're great. And relationship segment, we're talking about meeting your boyfriend or girlfriend's friends and the recent split of Arnold Schwarzenegger and Maria.
Shriver, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yikes. And then, as always, Janine will take us out with what's on tap for the weekend. So
we're going forward to that as well. Under 60 seconds, maybe?
Under 60 seconds again? I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. You can find out all this and more online at transitionsradio.com. Where else can they find us, Chally?
You can find us on Facebook, Jumpstart This Productions, and Transitions Radio. Type in either of those. And on the Twitter at Transitions R.
And be sure to check us out every Friday from 4 to 5 p.m. on 89.1 FM, WYBF, coming out of Radnor, Pennsylvania, Cabrini College.
That's right.
So we have a great show for you. Hope you enjoy it.
And let's take it over to Janine and meet this, Liam.
This Liam Neeson, Jonathan Smith, Aslan combination. Janine, take it away.
Hi, everyone. I am Janine Gibbons, and tonight on And Lights Up, we have actor Jonathan Smith with us. So give it up for Jonathan, everyone. That's right.
Hello.
I just saw Jonathan this past weekend in a wonderful production of The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. So with the first drama troupe in Quakertown, PA, and it was very, very good. Actually, a couple other people from Transitions were at the show. Our videographer, Danielle, shout out to you, and Noel. So, yeah, let's just go right into it. Thank you for being on.
Oh, no problem.
You're welcome. So you played the lead character, which is always a good thing.
Yeah.
Aslan, the lion, the king of beasts. So my first question tonight is, like, what is it like playing such a heroic character, especially an animal and not even a human? How do you get into that?
Well, I mean, it was a little weird playing an animal because, you know, you had to really prepare. I lived outside for like 2 weeks before the play. Have you seen the Big Cats movie that's coming out?
Yeah,
I'm actually in that. I'm one of the Big Cats.
Oh, congratulations.
Just preparing for the role, you know.
Well, I should have plugged you like that then.
Yeah. No, it was a lot of fun. Just, you know, normal stuff. Lots of running through the lines. I watched The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, you know, the movie, probably like 50 times preparing for it, you know, really channeling Liam Neeson through...
Go ahead.
Voice. So, yeah, it was more fun than anything. Yeah,
I mean, you did do a really good channeling of Liam Neeson. It came out. Like, you know, I mean, it's so funny because I have to say, for the people who weren't there, I saw you changing, like, the set pieces in your lion costume, and I was just, like, waiting for it. I was like, what's this going to be like? Like, you know, yeah. I'd never seen the play version of that. I've seen the movie as well. I love that movie. But then you opened your mouth, and it was just the booming voice. So before we go any further into this mm-hmm. interview, I'm going to have to ask you if you'd be willing to do, like, your favorite Aslan line.
Oh, goodness.
Like, or just one of – I mean, if you feel comfortable, of course. But we'd really appreciate it.
Well, I think my favorite line was probably when Aslan like kind of like gets all up in the witch's face when she's like, "How do I know your promise will be kept?" You know, and then he turns around and he's kind of like, "You know that when Aslan makes a promise, it will be kept." And then he roars, but that was dubbed in. I was not a good roarer.
Oh my God, no, don't even say that, because actually at that exact moment when you roared, it was a sound clip, but you mimed it perfectly, because it was like a full roar and then another roar and then a half roar, and you even got the half roar. And a lot of people would have just by that, you know, so.
Yeah.
No, it's good. Well, thank you for that. Yeah. And then maybe just a transitions radio in the Liam Neeson voice.
Yes.
And then we'll move on, I swear.
let me see. You're listening to Transitions Radio.
I love it. Thank you so much.
Roar.
Roar. Awesome. Well, it is a pleasure speaking with you, the voice. All right. So my next question is, what was it like working with a cast that the ages ranged from 6 years old, I believe, to like adulthood? What was that experience like?
It was different. The plays that I've done before have been more adults than children, so it was challenging, because a lot of the younger kids, you know, they'd run around. They were almost like a human prop. You know, you had to constantly figure out, where's Simon? Where'd he go? He's coming up, you know. But honestly, I think the middle schoolers were the hardest, because they were kids from the Quakertown Drama Club, and so they all knew each other. And so they would all, you know, start talking and, you know, about stuff that went on at school that day. And their cue would come, and it would be like, they'd be, "Oh, Jenny was telling me about Joe," and, you know. And we'd be like, "Hello, Peter, you're up, buddy." And he'd be, oh, yeah, okay. So, yeah, it was more of a challenge with them, I think, than even the younger kids. And reliability, too. The kids, it was amazing that they would just not show up. I'm like, "It's dress rehearsal. You should be here for your part." But it was amazing. They really pulled through. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as you guys saw, I think it came out really well in the end. So.
I agree. It did come out really well. And everybody did, you know, they knew their lines. They were into their roles. I think that was the major thing that really came from that performance, is everybody was just so into it, especially the little kids.
Yeah.
Because it's almost like one of the ladies who was working there was saying this, like, it's almost like make-believe for them.
Oh, yeah.
So that is so cool.
They worked so hard on their lines, the little guys. He would tense, like, waiting for his line. He'd be like... And he'd prompt the other kids. If the other kid didn't say his cue line, he'd be like, "Hello, your line is up so that I can shout at you."
See, those are the kinds of people I love. I mean, they're great. That's always good to have that one person who knows what everyone else's part is.
Yeah.
A stage manager in the making. That's funny.
Yeah.
All right, so my next question is... Well, you kind of already answered this one, so maybe I can semi-skip it. But do you believe in watching the movies to prepare for a role? Like, because some actors are like, "Oh, no, like, that's cheating," or whatever. Do you think that's okay?
Yeah, I think so. The play that we did was technically based on the movie, so I think watching the movie definitely helped, like, capture, because a lot of lines were similar. And I've never actually heard of a play version of Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe being done before. So I didn't have anything else to, like, base my role on. You know, and the books are good, but it's, you know, the plays are so visual, you know, that it was nice. And especially, I mean, I keep coming back to the Liam Neeson voice. From my perspective, I looked like the Cowardly Lion from, you know, The Wizard of Oz. So in order to make it less... or more than a comedy, almost, you know, you had to really get that voice. And so watching the movie was an integral part of, you know, preparing.
Well, you did a good job. I mean, that's definitely what I thought. I, like, leaned over to Noelle and I was like, "Oh my gosh, he sounds just like Liam Neeson." So that is very cool. So outside of this play, you're a filmmaker and you're going to school for nursing. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, my dream has always been to be a major motion picture director. But when I was about probably 17 or 18, I realized that you have to be really good to make it, you know, big, and they'd be able to support a family, because I want to have a family. So I figured I'd do nursing, because it's very flexible. It's a lot of different fields, and abilities that you can do and focus on that still give you time to pursue other hobbies. So I figured I'll do nursing and then, you know, use that to make a living and then pursue filmmaking on the side.
And so many people do that who are transitioning. I mean, I'm doing that now. Like, I love to act and I love radio, but I have a job as a receptionist and I love it. So it's a lot of fun. That's cool. And then you have your passion. I think it's good. It's a good bounce.
Yeah.
So, and it's so funny because I actually have a friend who's doing the same thing you are. He's going to nursing school and he's acting at the same time for the same reason. So it's just funny. It's like a pattern on transitions and he's been on as well.
Cool.
So thank you for continuing it. It's a good
Absolutely.
One. So what other things do you have? Well, let me ask you this. Okay, so my last question, I'm going to make it a two-parter, but where did your love of theater and film come from? Like, what's been the inspiration for you to get into these things? And what upcoming roles or films do you have on the horizon that we can look out for?
I think my love of acting and performing stuff came from my dad. He did a lot of community theater, and he was actually a stand-up comedian, you know, back in the days, way back when the dinosaurs roamed the earth, you know. But so I think my love came from that, from watching him grow up, is because he's all about performing and, you know, he's the life of the party, telling jokes and stuff. So I think my love came from that. And upcoming roles, we're the first drama troupe is doing Miracle on 34th Street in the fall. So come out to that. You know, I don't know who I'll be yet.
Hopefully the little girl.
Yeah, I'm hoping for it, but I don't know. And then I'm also hoping over the summer to make a second installment of my D-Team movie, which it's a movie about an elite team of, like, SWAT guys who use Doritos as a terrorist suppressant.
Wow, that's amazing. You know, if they could do that, the world would be a better place.
I know, it would be amazing.
Wow.
It's so cheap.
Exactly. Very good for the economy too. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being on. It's been a pleasure and good luck to you. One last thing.
Okay.
Do you have any advice for people going into the entertainment industry? What's your advice basically?
Just get into it, you know, talk to people. There's all kinds of resources on the internet, but get into it and don't be ashamed of it. You know, like, invite your friends to come out and see you perform. You know, make it big and make it loud.
Make it roar.
Yeah, make it roar.
All right. Well, thank you so much. That was Jonathan Smith. I'm Janine Gibbons.
Thank you for having me.
Your arts and entertainment contributor for Transitions. Kill the lights. Back to you, John Callie.
So, thanks, Janine, for your segment. I've never actually seen The Lion, the Witch, of the Wardrobe or read it, but I've heard good things about it.
It's a great movie. You should check it out.
Apparently. I mean, this is what I'm hearing.
I had no idea it was a book. I thought it was just the movie.
Well, it's a book.
I thought Liam Neeson was the genesis of it.
Well, you know, you learn something new every day, John. Pick up a book, and I'll go see the movie.
Okay.
No, let's go to Dan, hear more about the NBA playoffs and controversies in Philly sports. Dan always has the down low on what's going on. Dan?
All right, welcome back to another edition of the Three-Pointer. Dan Schmidt, joined as always by the coach, Dave Bennett.
How we doing?
Now, lots happened since we had our last segment here. Flyers season ended just with, you can't even call it a train wreck. That was just like a full-on missile hitting a plane.
It was pretty upsetting.
Pretty bad. A lot of news coming out about the Flyers since the season has ended. Six players scheduled or already had surgery this week, with two more on the way, and Jeff Carter and Scott Hartnell possibly needing hip surgery. We also have some controversy brewing with the Phillies. Roy Oswalt took 8 days to go down and survey damage in his hometown of Mississippi, which was just ravaged by tornadoes. Flyers, and some people in the Phillies front office are not too happy that he was down there working an excavator and a tractor when he was taking time off from the team. And also today we're going to unveil a bit of a new segment that we're going to call Free Throws, tentatively. If you've got a better name, please email it in. But anyway, it's going to be basically a quick hit five-question breakdown of the NBA playoffs. So it should be a fun segment today. But let's jump right into it with the Flyers. Season ended with a disaster. We found out this week that Mike Richards, Chris Pronger, Michael Layton, Blair Betts, Andre Mazaros, and Chris Versteeg all need major surgery. Some of them already done this week. Some of them are scheduled this week. And Jeff Carter and Scott Hartnell might need hip surgery. But the biggest news coming out of Flyers camp as the season is ending were the comments made by Peter Laviolette about how him and Captain Mike Richards are still working on their relationship, which, you know, if you read between the lines, basically says that they don't get along. Coach, being a coach, what is your take on the situation here?
You got to look at the player and how he's been throughout the years. Look at the coaches he's gone through. I'll stick with most recently, John Stevens. John Stevens was a player's coach. He let you do what you wanted.
He was their coach on the Phantoms.
Yeah, and he was their coach on the Phantoms. You knew him growing up. You know, he just kind of let them do their thing. He didn't really have to work on a relationship because it was there for so long. Peter Laviolette coming through, not halfway through last year, but close to it after a little, you know, some games. You're going to have a little bit of push and pull for some power and how you feel about it. But let's then look at the player. Mike Richards is very to himself. Everyone says it and everyone knows it. Danny Briere was quoted as saying he can't figure out why everyone's making such a big deal about his relationship with Peter Laviolette when he's such a good captain. He leads by example. He's a quiet guy, but he plays his butt off. It's something you got to look at, and you can't really take too much in. I think it's the media kind of going nuts with it.
But one of the jobs of being a captain on a professional hockey team is how you deal with the coach and how you deal with the media and how you interact with the other players. And you can be a quiet, reserved guy and still be a captain, but you can't shun the media. You can't, you know, every time the coach and you have a disagreement, you can't just up and take your ball and go home.
Why can't you shun the media?
Because you're the captain. You have a responsibility to relay that to the media.
You have no responsibility.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. You are the captain of the team. You are the voice of the team.
I disagree. You're the voice in the locker room and on the court, ice, field, whatever it is. The media has nothing to do with it. I'm sorry, I have to disagree with you. I don't think that he's obligated to sit and go through it with the media and say, well, here's what's going on, here's what we're thinking. He's asked questions, he'll answer them honestly, but I don't think he has to divulge any major information like they're always looking for out of him. And because he divulges so little, they read between the lines on everything he says.
And I mean, it's not so much as divulging information, but you have to know, there has to be a little bit of expectation that I'm the captain. When things go bad, it's going to be on my head. When things go right, I'm going to get a lot of the credit. It's like being a quarterback, you know? Part of being the captain means that when things go wrong, you got to face the music. There's going to be some tough questions that you don't want to answer, but you have to. And one of the players that I think he should, you know, learn from as an example is Chris Pronger. Because Chris Pronger has been a captain before in this league, and if you look at how they act in the media, Chris Pronger seems like more of the captain of this team than Mike Richards. Chris Pronger don't want to talk to the media. He hates those guys. You can tell it in the inflection in his voice when he talks to them.
Yeah, Chris Pronger just lets people know what he's thinking. That's all it is. He tells you flat out. He goes, there
wasn't
an issue.
Would it be so horrible for Richards to just throw us a bone every now and then, though?
I just don't see why it's such a big deal if he's a quiet guy. Personally,
I'm sure this is a controversy that we will have brewing all through the summer as the Flyers are facing a lot of off-season questions. But let's get into something a little more current. Another player versus front office controversy, you could say. Roy Oswalt last week went down to his hometown in Mississippi, which was just devastated by tornadoes. He was gone for 8 days, missed one start, and when he came back, he was placed on the disabled list with a back injury. And it came out later that he was down there helping move trees. He was working an excavator. You know, he was doing a lot of hands-on kind of work down there. And the Phillies weren't too happy about that, specifically Charlie Manuel and Ruben Amaro.
I see where you're coming from, not you personally, but I see where they're coming from. And you really don't want your guy putting any more stress on his body. It's a really long season. He's got a lot of work to do, you know, moving forward as a team. But at the same time, you have to look at family in this situation and go, look, his family I'm sure he had tons of friends down there. It's his hometown. It's not like his family just moved there in the past couple years. They've lived there their whole lives. It's greatly affecting him. Do you really think he'd be in the right state of mind if he didn't go and help? I mean, you got to give the guy's due. He went down there. He worked hard. He helped his family, his community, and people around him. He should be commended for that, not chastised for having a little bit of a back problem, which he's had over the course of his career. So it happens. Those kinds of things happen. He's averaged missing a couple starts a year. So that's where he gets it now, I think. And I think it should just be laid to rest.
Now, obviously, your family comes first. I have no problem with him putting his family above baseball because, I mean, who wouldn't? You'd have to be heartless to think that your profession is more important than your family. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, do you really need to be on the excavator? Do you really need to be taking the trees off the houses? Do you really need to be doing all that hands-on work? Because Roy Oswalt has a unique profession and where that his body is the tool that he uses down there. You know, we're doing a radio show, and the tools that we use are our voice. Now, would it behoove me to go to, say, a concert or something and scream my lungs out and not be able to come in and do this radio segment? I mean, it's kind of apples and oranges there, but you see where I'm coming from. If your tool is your body for your job, then that should be one of the caveats that Charlie Manuel and Ruben Amaro said when they sent him down there. Be like, go help whatever you can, but do not put any stress on your body. Don't lift anything that's overly heavy. And I mean, you're Roy Oswalt. I'm sure everyone in his town knows who he is. This isn't like a big city that he's from. It's a small southern town. Everybody knows he's got $15, $16 million coming in every year. Hire somebody else to do the work.
I agree, and I understand what you're saying, but at the same time, I did construction for 6 years. I know what he's actually doing. Running an excavator, that's not stress on your body, stress on your back. That's sitting in a chair, moving knobs and moving things back and forth. That's nothing. I see where you're coming from. Yes, it is his tool, but at the same time, it's family. He did what he thought was necessary, and I would do the same thing, and I commend him.
I mean, we've seen a lot of professional sports contracts insert clauses into said contract that prevent the player from doing physical activity other than their desired sport. For example, Ben Roethlisberger, he ain't allowed to ride a motorcycle anymore.
He shouldn't be.
Well, exactly. Well, he's riding a motorcycle without a helmet. Well, but then again,
he's riding a motorcycle.
It's Ben Roethlisberger. We know that there really isn't much brain to protect in that skull. Anyway, let's move along to our new segment, Free Throws, where we're breaking down the NBA playoffs. And I gotta tell you, usually I feel the NHL playoffs are far superior to the NBA playoffs, but this year it's not the case. This year the NBA playoffs have been really good. And we'll be crowning a new champion this year. So to start this off, we got the Mavericks, the Thunder, the Grizzlies, the Celtics, the Heat, the Hawks, and the Bulls remaining. Coach, what's your marquee finals matchup?
Well, I hate to say it because I'm not the biggest fan of the team and how it got put together, but I got the Heat for sure coming from the East and the Mavs from the West. I really do think it's the Mavs' year. They just beat the defending champions handily, not close. Handily took care of them. You know, they're a great total team this year. They play more defense than I've seen them play in years because they've always been an offensive scoring team, but in years, their defense is phenomenal now. So I got the Heat and the Mavs. How would you feel about LeBron James winning a title in his first year in Miami?
I'll be in the absolute minority of this, but I think LeBron James winning a title his first year in Miami would be tremendous because I think that LeBron James gets so much crap undeservedly, and here's why. LeBron James took less money to go to a team where he thought had a chance to win. Any other time, we commend a player for doing that. Cliff Lee did that for the Phillies, and people fell in love with the guy. People were like shedding tears over it. But for some reason, people think that LeBron James owes something to Cleveland. Why? Because they failed to get him a secondary scorer the entire time he was there. LeBron James took less money to go play on a team that he thought was good enough to win a championship. Why should we vilify him for this? I think LeBron James winning a title his first year in Miami is great for the NBA because people like me will enjoy the fact that the best player in the league won the championship, and because people who hate him will get to hate all summer. Okay, moving on here about the NBA Finals. Have we seen the end of the Kobe Bryant Lakers dynasty?
No, I don't believe we have. I think you still got Kobe there. You got all their returning starters plus Lamar Odom next year. Granted, they're going to make a move. I think that team's gotten stale playing together. You know, the Dwight Howard speculation's out there. I hope that doesn't happen, to be honest with you, because that's just, to me, BS. if Kobe gets another, you know, star like Shaquille O'Neal and all that kind of stuff that he got. I think that's a little bit far, few and far between that it happens, but hopefully it doesn't for him. So we'll see. But no, I don't think they're done. I think they're back next year in contention. AC Grizzlies making the finals. Do you believe that that is good for the NBA or bad for the NBA?
I think the Grizzlies making the finals is bad for the NBA. And here's why. Because the NBA is built around its marketable stars, and the Grizzlies have absolutely none of those. Like, you can give me your Zach Randolphs and your Marc Gasols. These are the poor man versions of superstar players. Memphis Grizzlies winning a playoff round, maybe even two? Yeah, that's great. You hardly ever see upsets in the NBA like absolutely. That, especially out of an 8 seed. But them making it all the way to the finals? No. I want the best players playing in the finals, and the Memphis Grizzlies don't have those. Alright, let's wrap it up here. Evan Turner was recently in a Twitter war with a 15-year-old girl about who was better, the Backstreet Boys or NSYNC. Coach, who's on your iPod?
Neither.
Not one song?
No.
You don't have Bye 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 on your iPod?
No, I got none of that stuff.
You know what? I think you gotta go with NSYNC. I think Backstreet Boys, you know, they had a fair amount of hits, but they didn't have the big hits like NSYNC did. And none of them went on to become as big a star as Justin Timberlake did. I'm going NSYNC. But at the same time, Evan Turner, if this is what you're arguing about over Twitter, can we trade this guy?
Get a life, dude. Just get a life. Other than Twitter wars with a 15-year-old. Come on, man.
He does kind of look like Urkel.
He does. Very Urkel-esque.
All right. Well, that's all the time we got this week for the three-pointer. Join us back next week. Three all-new topics. Please be sure to check out the blog, too, for a more in-depth breakdown of what went wrong with the Flyers season. Check that out at transitionsradio.com. And if you have a question that you want us to read on the air, send them in to my email address, dschmidt@transitionsradio.com. That's all we got this week. I want to thank the coach, as always.
Thanks for having me.
We'll throw it back to John and Callie.
Always great to hear about the current events in sports, Dan. Great to hear about it. Kelly, what do we have coming up next?
Well, we're talking about Facebook again. We talked about it before in the relationship segment. We sort of talked about Facebook and dating, but now we're going to be talking about Facebook and employment and just life in general with Facebook, some of the challenges that we personally may feel with it, and, of course, their little snaggle with Google. That was an odd choice of word, but...
Apparently, Facebook hired a PR firm.
Yeah.
To slander...
Google. Google. That's right.
To write misleading things about Google taking data that they shouldn't do from their users for privacy concerns.
Yeah.
Which is funny because Facebook is a huge...
Facebook is built to slander people, which is one thing we're going to talk about in the discussion. Of course, if you have any comments that you would like to leave about Facebook, you can tweet me, as awkward as that is, or you can write it on Facebook. That's even more awkward. You can tweet us at TransitionsR. You can also find us on our Facebook page at Jumpstart This Productions, Transitions Radio.
And be sure to check out everything you hear tonight and a lot more on our website at TransitionsRadio.com. As well, listen in every Friday from 4 to 5 p.m. on 89.1 FM, The Burn, out of Radnor, Pennsylvania.
That's right. So, yeah, tonight we're talking about Facebook, and actually, we'll get to the Google issue later. The first thing I want to bring to everyone's attention, I'm not sure if everyone's aware of it, but the Consumer Reports recently came out saying that millions of Facebook users are actually underage. And I took a look at the Chicago Tribune. They had a bunch of quotes from the actual Consumer Reports article. The magazine said it estimates that 7.5 million of the 20 million minors on Facebook are younger than 13. So there's 20 million minors and 7.5 million are younger than 13. More than 5 million children in this group are 10 and younger. And the magazine said it projects that 1 million children were harassed, threatened, or subjected to other forms of cyberbullying on the site in the past year. So that, to me, is an outstanding piece of information. And once again, it comes back to the internet needing some sort of regulating and nobody knowing how to do it. John, why are you
That's
laughing?
That's a touchy issue, regulating the internet. Facebook... I think when you sign on, I mean, I signed on when it came out when we were still sophomores in college, which was back in the day.
That was late. I was like senior in high school on it.
Really? What?
Yeah, I was talking to people.
I didn't have a cell phone until I was like 23.
Yeah, I was
mom had like a lock on it. I'm kidding. Facebook asks you, you know, are you above 13?
Woo.
Yeah, but I think you just check a box or maybe.
Who would lie?
You make your birthday 1927 and then.
Who would say that they're under 13, that they're 13 when they're not?
Derek,
everybody.
Chat
everybody
rooms.
Would.
But it's a huge issue, especially with cyberbullying as well. What does our audience think about the whole Facebook security deal, having to say that you're older than 13 before you log in? Do you think it's effective?
No.
No?
No, it's straight up not effective because all you had to do is click a box and boom, you're over 13. Remember, everyone on the internet is 10 feet tall, 300 pounds, and looks like, you know, Zeus, you know, on the internet. It's all fake anyway.
And just to make a point, one of the recent cases that was featured in newspapers everywhere, I think it was from Archbishop High School or Archbishop Ryan. I don't know all the names around here, but it was an athletic director. A student reached out to him on Facebook to ask if he could help him get his cleats or get something out of his locker that was locked in there past the closing of the school. The athletic director agreed that he would and then began asking the kid for sexual favors and asked him to be quiet about it. So not only that, but, you know, kids are there's so many things I feel that need to be regulated. Teachers being on Facebook and a lot of people have brought up the idea of a separate Facebook meant for younger kids. Face tablet, maybe. Face tablet.
That's a huge leap, though, going from, hey, can you get my shoes, to, hey, sexual favors? There had to be something in between there. There had to have been like, hey, do you want to meet after school? There's got to – like, it can't just be like, hey, Callie, can you grab my shoes out of my locker?
Facebook made me do it.
It was a string of messages. I mean, I didn't quote word for word. I don't know these people. I wasn't involved in that string.
Callie was the moderator.
There's a lot of issues, too, going on with with children, obviously, but also with people in our generation, our cohort, with posting pictures online, maybe having your friends say, you know, hey, it was funny that you did A, B, and C, you know, this weekend, and maybe it was, you know, not too friendly, you know, things that you don't want your grandmother to know. Yeah. But now it's on your Facebook wall. It's for the world to see and your employer to see. So when you're trying to find a job in this tough economy, how do you mask that kind of thing? I mean, do you guys think it's something to look out for as a part of our generation?
I do. Not just for employers, but, like, you know, to bring it back to the younger children, like family members, like cousins. Like, I have a cousin who's 13 who's on Facebook. Hi, Hallie. And, you know, I don't want to put anything up that's going to make her, you know, question the fact that, like, I'm somebody to look up to, you know? So, and anyone, like, I'm friends with my aunts, my uncles, like, everybody has Facebook. So it's a matter of what you're comfortable with people knowing about you. And it's hard because then, like, you know, Callie was saying in one of her discussion points, it's not always you who posts the things. It's, like, somebody else. And then, you know, it becomes so much of the norm, but it's really hard to censor yourself when there's just this thing there that says, what's on your mind? You know what I mean? I feel like
I think it's
changed.
A norm.
That, yeah.
It's a norm among us, but I think there's like one or two pictures of me drinking a beer on Facebook. And my cousin, I just added, and I went home for the Mother's Day. And my mom thinks I'm a rabid drunk because my cousin is telling my mom, you know, John's on Facebook drinking or something of that sort.
And, yeah, you know. It's problematic. And that's actually something that I wanted to address. Let's see, I have it in here. So Facebook, it allows users to post photos taken of their friends. And my only issue with that is that friends can't get the photos taken down when they find them unflattering, upsetting, and annoying. And I've actually looked into this because there's, you know, just because you untag yourself, which if anybody out there doesn't use Facebook, means you take your name off the photo so nobody can associate it with you if they don't know you. It's still on Facebook. It's still on the internet. And I think you can click to report it and then you have to say why you're reporting it. And you're not allowed to you simply, like, if you say it's unflattering, they're like, ask your friend to take it down. And my issue with this is there are girls out there, you know, with eating disorders and self-esteem problems, and saying that a photo is unflattering is not just an easy fixable problem for them. In some cases, in some psychological cases, that can be the end of the world, that picture's on Facebook, and they can't get it down. And then you have to lie and say it's bullying, and Facebook, or bullying or cruelty or something like that. And Facebook, it's at their discretion. If they think you're telling the truth, if they think it's bullying, they'll delete it. And if not, mm-hmm. you're stuck. And I don't think that's fair.
I read one account where it was an older journalist who had a Facebook account, and it wasn't really any illicit photos, I don't believe, but someone had compromised her identity online through the Facebook and had written all these just awful things. When she tried to contact Facebook to say, someone hijacked this, can you take it down? Obviously, there's not a 1-800 number that you can call and, you know, talk to an operator.
You can't just call up Mark.
Yeah, I mean, you can't just say, you know, this is something serious. So therefore, your online reputation becomes a risk. And there's actually an industry raised around protecting your online reputation, where they'll flood Google and other search engines with positive things about you, so that anything negative will be maybe on the 18th, 19th page. This is assuming that you only look at the first three. You know, whenever they type in John Mim, et cetera, it transitions radio.
I can't believe that there's a whole industry that just puts, you know, John Mim at Transitions Radio as the best person ever. I can't believe that it's come to that point where we pay people to make up stuff about our made up lives on Facebook.
No, I don't know if I see it as that,
yeah,
but
I mean, there's a certain amount of. In your presentation online, I think even in like real life, there's a certain amount like that you're willing to share. But when someone takes that over, like if someone would take over my bank account, I would want someone to come in and repair that. You know, give me my money back. Maybe it's okay for somebody who has a career, whose career could be damaged, like a journalist who thrives on an audience that doesn't immediately know her. It's not like the guy who you go to fix your shoes at the mall. They even do that anymore? I don't know. But I mean,
such a random example of like a service worker, not like your car mechanic or something. Yeah. Uses.
But someone who has an online presence and depends on that for their income, I think it's a useful service.
I didn't say it was useful. It's depressing that we've.
Yeah,
come
I mean,
to that
it's
point.
It's something new. Yeah, admittedly.
I just think for young kids that, you know, it takes years of experience to develop morals, to develop responsibility, to develop educated viewpoints. When you're 18 years old and on Facebook, you're not thinking, oh, shoot, that picture of me drinking with my pants down probably isn't a good idea. I mean, you think it's funny and maybe you detag it, but you don't care that it's up there. Later, when you're 24 and you're trying to become a journalist or, you know, somebody, maybe a public figure, maybe a lawyer, if anybody ever has a beef with you, if you will, blackmail. Like a vengeance out to get you, pull that picture. If you're a public figure, you're done. And that type of stuff is scary. And I think that young kids should be protected from that. They should understand anything that goes on here is going to come out to get you later, which is why I want to transition to my next point here is the idea of doing what I call a Facebook purge and getting rid of people you don't want to view your profile anymore. I personally have gone through my Facebook and gotten rid of hundreds of friends. People that I just don't know that I was friends with because I went to Penn State and we had a mutual network, but I think I don't want this person knowing what I'm doing with my life. I'd rather promote Transitions Radio through the Transitions Radio website. I don't want my personal page.
You keep unfriending me, by the way.
Yeah, I know. Why do you keep friending me, by the way? I accept you to be nice. No, but Facebook purge, and it's, you know, choosing to delete certain friends, and then is that going to be an issue later if you're not friends with that person? I think someone in our audience mentioned the drama that surrounds, to quote them, the drama that surrounds unfriending somebody. It's like smacking someone across the face in public is the equivalent of unfriending someone.
It is. Yeah, there's two reasons that you unfriend someone. Like you said, someone you had class with a couple years ago, you never talked to them, nobody really cares, so you're not friends. But then there's that person who you just don't want to be associated with anymore. And I had this happen where I didn't care for this girl. I was like, oh, well, you know, we never talk anyway. I defriended her and she sent me this long message, 25 question marks. Why did you defriend me? I can't believe I am really offended. I'm like, I don't even talk to you. Okay.
And she's writing me message upon message why I should friend her back. And I said, okay. And I friended her for another year. She never spoke to me on Facebook, but she had to be my friend for whatever reason. And I just defriended her again. Thankfully, haven't heard anything back. But you almost wonder, are they just looking at my profile because they're creeping, they want to find news? Not because they really care about my life, but because they want to look at something. They want to find something juicy, want to keep up with the gossip. And that's not a real friend, just a Facebook creeper.
It's a gossip forum. I mean, how many times a day do you hear somebody say, oh, did you see on Facebook so-and-so's pregnant? And that's what it becomes. And the things that I've seen on Facebook have honestly disgusted me. I've seen fights between boyfriends and girlfriends. I recently saw a girl I know posting several, you know, status updates about somebody stabbing her in the back and how two can play at this game. Yeah, you know, stuff like that is I don't think kids should be around, and it's sad to see that adults are engaging in it. I've seen, you know, a young mother of a little boy posting pictures of guns that she got, you know, as a gift and bragging about it, breaking up with a fiance and, you know, talking about him on Facebook. Stuff like that is private, and we're basically allowing this forum to – and it's not like I go looking for this information. This is what is popping up to me, you know.
Do you think it's going to come to a point where as more of our generation and the generations behind us become less private, and of course as the older generation goes off to the nursing homes?
Bye. Kidding. Everyone wave.
I'm kidding. But do you think it's going to become less of an issue since there's no longer this idea of a privacy barrier? But will we still always have that? To a certain degree, or will it just diminish and we just all share whatever's on our minds?
The media is the social networking is going to be a growing problem. It's a new platform for bullying. It's a new platform for making fun of people. It's easy to post videos and pictures, and you can have somebody tormented by hundreds of people within minutes. It's the easiest way to bully someone. And I realize there's a lot of positives, which I haven't touched on. Facebook is great for connecting with friends and family.
Share pictures of a grandchild with a
You can, but is that creepy or is that okay to post pictures of your young kids on there?
I think it's gonna toughen people's skin. With hundreds of people being able to attack you in a minute, I think you're going to be able to resist all those people. I mean, the same way you get through elementary school where it's only your 30 kids in your classroom that you got to deal with, now it's a couple hundred, so people are just going to adapt. You know what I mean? And I get that there's going to be an overload of, you know, there's so much. People's skins are just going to have to get thicker, or they're just going to fall apart to begin with.
I think it's going to result in somebody from our generation writing a parenting book on how to parent Facebook. Because you're going to deal with kids who are not coming home saying, so-and-so stuck gum in my hair. You're going to have kids coming home say, so-and-so posted this about me. And
we're in a Borders. I guarantee you there's already some book like that. Intern, go. That's why we have an intern.
I'm going to do this, kind of piggyback this to my segment next week, where I'm going to talk about athletes using Facebook and Twitter. And I'll tell you what, if you are a sports agent, Twitter and Facebook are a public relations nightmare because you have these uneducated athletes spouting off whatever they want to talk about, and then the agents are just like, I cannot believe – like when Adrian Peterson compared his job as a running back to being a slave in the South.
Yeah.
Like
– Oh.
Like if you're his agent, you just got to be like, oh my God. Rashard Mendenhall last week said, well, maybe we should hear Bin Laden's side of the story. Like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, some things are best left unsaid, and I think that's the problem. Facebook and Twitter are, what are you thinking?
It gives people it gives people like that feel like that their opinion now matters because they have this many people following, when really, who gives a crap what Rashard Mendenhall thinks about anything? Your job is to run fast.
I follow the Bible.
Oh, by the way, he already lost a major sponsorship for posting that, so good job, idiot.
Dan Schmidt, everybody.
The kind words of Dan Schmidt.
You're a sports guy.
So we were talking about this earlier, but Facebook just got in trouble today for hiring a PR firm to slander Google online, saying that they've been stealing data from their users. And I find it ironic because Facebook is usually the one that's in the hot seat for the protection of privacy, even though you know it's online.
Yeah.
Give me a break. But what do you think about the cat?
Well, one of the things that first came to mind for me was that Facebook is a really young company. I mean, it has employees, you know. It was started by a college student who was probably around our – what year was it? 2000
– Probably our age,
2001,
a little older.
A few years older than all of us. And when you're a young company, you're still learning. I mean, I know they I don't know all the specifics of the company. I'm sure that they have, you know, they obviously have wealthy investors. That's how they started. And they have, I'm sure, a great advice platform where they get tons of insight to business. But, you know, you have a young CEO. These types of things happen. But I think it's pretty sickening. And I guess the article that I read was saying that Facebook, you know, they must have a reason to be nervous about something Google's doing because, you know, why are they hiring this PR firm to plant articles?
Google Chat, they're releasing a new, like a new AIM, basically, where it's a video chat. It's voice over IP. So people are, Facebook's worried about doing that. And Facebook's starting to try and do like a FaceTime, like the Apple FaceTime app. And that's what Google's issuing. So, I mean, it's the two superpowers of the internet.
Facebook's got nothing to worry about. They got a lot of money. And even though they are a young company, they have a lot of money that they can spend on.
So does Google, though.
Yeah, but I don't know. It's two separate things. You go on Google to find things about that you don't know. And you go on to Facebook just to find things
about people you do know.
Yeah, thank you. That was good.
Wait, can I just say that Facebook chat has never been not creepy to me? There's never been a moment where I thought this face popping out and talking to me is normal. And when it first happened, I ducked from my computer and wondered how somebody knew I was on there. Because I felt like I don't want people to know I'm on Facebook. It's embarrassing.
Just text people. I mean, just send them a quick text.
Texting will always be the top of the line for me.
Yeah, I don't think Facebook has anything to worry about, but it's just interesting that they got caught and then they sort of just admitted it and said that, you know, yeah, we were saying some bad stuff.
Oh, whoops, won't happen again.
My bad.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's going to do it for us this week. And, you know, unfortunately, it's hard to get down to any conclusions because the internet is so up in the air right now. And I'll say it, you know, every day for the rest of my life until it happens. The internet needs regulation, and some program needs to be implemented where, you know, we need to have, you know, consequences and penalties for people who are bullying, and something needs to be done. You can leave comments for us on our Twitter at TransitionsR, or like I said, on our Facebook, which is kind of awkward. But ironic. And you can send me or John an email, any one of us an email. Just go to our website at www.transitionsradio.com. You'll find all our contact information on there.
Just don't make it a creepy message.
You can send me a creepy one. No, I'm just kidding. If you do, I'm going to forward it to everybody and laugh.
Nice. That will do it for us.
Coming up next, we're talking about meeting your significant other's group of friends and that high profile divorce or possible divorce that's taken the media spotlight. Will they be back? All right, guys. So we're bringing it in this week to talk relationships. And I know we got off topic last week because we're awesome at that. And we started talking about how crazy it is to meet your boyfriend or girlfriend's friends. What are the rules for that? And how do you react if friends don't like each other?
And Janine's prison tattoos.
What do you do? Janine's prison tattoos, which is why she didn't hit it off with her boyfriend's friends. They knew she was a murderer. So, you know, all that kind of stuff. What do you do if you're a murderer and you're meeting your boyfriend's friends? No.
One for the homies.
Really, though, what are the rules for meeting friends? This is such a broad topic, but it's such an important one. It's so nerve-wracking when you have to meet, you know, your boyfriend's friends and you hoping they approve of you.
To put on a good face, huh? It's awful.
It's hard. And, like, you don't, you know, you're still, like, when a relationship is new, you're still getting to know that other person, and then all these other group of people come in, and you don't want to make – of course you're going to have an initial impression, but you don't want to necessarily judge the person. And you're like, you know, if you get a bad vibe, do you go with that bad vibe? Or do you say, oh, no, this is just me being, like, you know, insecure or not comfortable yet in this new surrounding? So it's really difficult sometimes. And I think the more difficult it is right away, that's definitely an indicator for you to know – about the relationship sometimes, because if you're not comfortable, I feel, with a person's friends after a while, especially, you're probably not comfortable with that person. There's something amiss there, which is something I've learned. So
I think there's kind of two ways that meeting the friends goes. I think number one, you either are so comfortable with your boyfriend or girlfriend and you know them so well that meeting them and they support you as much as you support them, that meeting their friends is, you know, they've already told their friends all about you and their friends are hoping and assuming they're going to like you. And then there's number two, where you sort of just started dating this person. You don't know them, you know, that well, but you know them enough to be dating them. And you meet their friends and you're not fully comfortable with your boyfriend or girlfriend yet. So you're not fully comfortable with their friends and you just try to like be this person to get people to like you. And then you wonder if you're coming off as yourself to your boyfriend or girlfriend.
When I meet my girlfriend's friends, I always try to wear a low cut top. and something short too. I find it helps to kind of loosen things up, kid.
And shoes that match your eyes?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Big long boots are kind of
nice.
It, you know, it helps to loosen things up and get conversation started. But I mean, it can definitely be nerve-wracking. But I like what Janine said. You know, if you hang out with the people that you kind of become who you hang out with. So if you're meeting, you know, her friends and they're just kind of total weirdos, you got to wonder, well, why is she hanging out with them? She must be
A total weirdo.
Yeah, exactly. So
I have to say, though, that I think for girls are so different around their girlfriends than they are like their boyfriend. Because girls can be silly and weird around their girlfriends, and they can do stuff that they can't do around their boyfriends. Does anybody agree with me?
I agree with that. I think I'm much weirder around my friends than I am around guys. Or sometimes, so.
I mean, my mom used to say to me, I hope you're not this weird around boys. Like, she would say that to me. And I'd be like, they should like me for who I am, because I'm really weird.
I don't know about anyone else, but I'm the catalyst. If my friends have a new girlfriend, and then they can get through me, if I give them the stamp of approval, then they're officially allowed to not be, like, harassed. I don't know if it is for anybody else, but I am like the gatekeeper. I'm the gatekeeper to the circle of the friends that I hold. So if someone new tries to come in, I'm the one that, like...
Someone new coming in tries to harass your girlfriend?
No.
Derek's girlfriend is here. Yeah. So I want her perspective on meeting your friends, what that was like. Meeting you, first of all.
Oh,
the
geez.
Gatekeeper. Yeah, come Derek. On. I want to know what she thought.
She's going to hate me.
And about you meeting her friends. We got to use it when we can get it.
So tell us about meeting Derek for the first time.
Well, I met Derek and I worked with his friends, so I already knew his friends. But once I was actually accepted, it got even more difficult because all they wanted to do was judge me and say, why is she doing that? What's wrong with her? It created a whole lot of drama.
You met Derek while you were working with his friends?
Yeah.
Where at?
At a restaurant. A little Italian place. Mm.
So what, Derek came in for a bowl of spaghetti bolognese and...
No, he was working too.
I worked there too.
Wow. Was it like Lady and the Tramp where you're sharing a bowl of spaghetti
bolognese?
No, he
leave me alone.
Oh, I could see that.
He was just staring at you while he was cooking or washing the dishes?
He is a delivery driver, so he would come in every now and then and not leave me alone.
I see.
Oh, romance at its finest, you know? Annoyance leads to love.
So Derek's friends gave you a lot of trouble at the beginning?
Yes, they did. They did.
And how'd you deal with that, Derek?
How did I deal with that?
Derek is notably quiet during this segment.
Well, I have a car ride with her later, so I don't want to get hit. No, to air our personal laundry, we kind of had a little bit of a fight, and then we just kind of realized, I kind of realized how stupid I was being, and then everybody else kicked the friend that was kind of being the D-bag, kind of like filling my head with all these thoughts. We kind of kicked him out of the group, and then everything has been right as rain since.
Excommunication. Nice.
Pretty much.
That's the way to go.
No, and the silver lining to that is that the friend that did kicked out, all the other friends that the other person like converted them to, they've actually come back to me. I'm like, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to be like that. So it worked out. happy ending.
Good. Wow. Your friends sound like a tough crowd. Boys.
Some of them. The one was, everyone else is pretty cool. But, you know, the one guy was, like I said, a total D, so.
Well, I don't know.
Conversation killer.
I mean, for girls, I think, I'm surprised. It sounds like that was more of like almost a girly thing for guys to be judging. I feel like that's a girl thing. Usually girls are filling other girls' heads because it's out of jealousy or something like that. And, oh, we think you can do better. And, you know, like I said, I don't think that really exists of being able to do better unless you're dating somebody who lives in a box, you know.
I'm totally.
Even still.
I want to clarify something. I am totally the girl in the relationship. So there's no two ways about it. I'm definitely the girl in the relationship.
Your girlfriend's like, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So just to clear that up.
Things just got tangy, by the way.
They got tangy. Palpable.
Palpable. I've never had an issue with any of my girlfriend's friends.
You're the lucky one. You're the one out of 100.
Yeah, smooth sailing for me, too, I got to say.
All right, shut up, both of you.
I mean, I think naturally there's any tension when you start changing yourself because you're in a relationship now, and that dynamic shifts away from who you are with your friends and who you are with this new person. But I think that's you growing. So it's a growing pain. That's what it is.
It really is. And I think whenever you do meet, you know, boyfriends, friends, or any new people, you get that kind of like anxious, nervous. You want everything to be okay. And I found the surefire way to get people to like you is to get them to talk about themselves, because that makes them happy and they're like, wow, I'm so great. This person loves to listen to me. And that's the way to just get anyone to like you.
You get them drunk and get them talking. You know, what do you like to do?
Come talk. I don't like You'll to talk about myself, night. But this weekend, you know.
that is true.
We got like a minute.
Well, I don't know. I think meeting the friends is definitely a hurdle, but and then, you know, comes meeting the family, which is even scarier because that is blood, and you gotta impress those people. So, you know, that's definitely a bigger hurdle, which we can probably talk about next week. A few other topics that I want us to talk about, but we'll get into it. And if anybody has any horror stories on meeting a boyfriend or girlfriend's friends or any advice for people in, you know, not so great friend meeting situations, you can tweet that to me at Callie R. McCurdy, or you can send me an email at C. McCurdy at transitionsradio.com. I have like 7 emails. My dad yells at me.
As long as it's not creepy.
As long as it's not creepy.
And on to the final subject, Schwarzenegger. And Maria Shriver?
Yeah, Schwarzenegger and Maria Shriver might be getting a divorce. That's all we're going to cover. Apparently, this has been going on for a while, and Maria has been upset for years into the marriage, even when Arnold was running for governor.
Oh, no.
What will she do?
The governator.
Will they work it out? Or is this over? You know?
Just to let people know that this is actually happening. We're not going to do anything else about it.
That's all we're going to tell you.
This is actually happening. If you want to pay attention to it.
This is real. Go to E! News or something. You know, check it out.
All right.
So we're not going to talk about Maria and Arnold. I lied to you guys, I guess. The only information I had is that they might be getting a divorce.
But what we are talking about is what's on tap for this weekend. And Janine is going to fill us in. Take it away, Janine.
Hi, everyone. I'm Janine Gibbons, your arts and entertainment contributor for Transitions. And here is what is on tap this weekend. On Friday, join Portalese Family Chiropractic on the 13th from 6 to 9 p.m. for Ladies Night Out. Expect a night of pampering, shopping, food, and refreshments. There will also be amazing raffles available, whose proceeds will go to the American Cancer Society Relay for Life of North Penn. Portalese Family Chiropractic is located on 490 Penbrook Parkway in Lansdale, PA. Also taking place this weekend is the Anti-Defamation League's Walk Against Hate. This walk will be taking place Sunday, May 15th from 2 to 5 p.m. on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway and West River Drive in Center City, Philadelphia. If you would like more information about the Walk Against Hate, please visit www.walkagainsthate.org. Finally, in theater, see previous Transitions guest actor Jack Jonas when the Barn Playhouse on Christopher Lamb and Rittenhouse Boulevard in Jefferson, PA presents the musical Rent. The show begins its run on May 6th at 8 p.m. and ends its run on May 24th. 21st. For a full schedule of all showtimes or ticket information, please visit www.barnplayhouse.org. I'm Janine Gibbons, your arts and entertainment contributor, and before I take it back to John and Callie, I would like to wish a very happy birthday to our technical producer, D-Tech. Yay! Happy birthday! Back to you, John and Callie.
Thanks, Janine, and be sure to check out some of those great events and hit up her blog. Leave a comment or two.
Hit up your blog.
Hit up my blog, The Zish. Oh, yeah, The Zish at blogspot.com, where I talk about all the events that went on the show that week. Thank you to everybody for tuning in this week, and, of course, to Jonathan Smith, or Liam, as I should say, for coming on the show and talking to us about his role. Hopefully we can catch him in upcoming plays. And thanks to Derek's girlfriend coming on and you know, airing that dirty laundry for us and obviously giving us a good platform to go by.
Absolutely.
When you get in that situation.
And we talked about Facebook and Google and privacy, which is ongoing. I'm sure we'll touch upon that.
Ongoing. We'll always be talking about it.
Dan always gave us a great look into what's going on with the Phillies and Flyers as well.
But be sure to check us out online at www.transitionsradio.com.
And Facebook.com/transitionsradio.
And the Twitter at Transitions R.
And every Friday from 4 to 5 p.m. on WYBF-FM, The Burn, out of Radnor, Pennsylvania.
Thanks for listening. I'm Callie McCurdy.
And I'm John Mim.
And thanks for listening to Transitions.